Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 211 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm greatly pleased to host Sid Verma, a deeply experienced digital industrial transformation advisor. Sid builds profitable, high-growth digital product and services businesses across diverse industries, including the industrials, aerospace, and automotive sectors. He was most recently the CTO and president of digital and innovation for Aztec Industries, a publicly held industrial leader with over 1,100 employees. Prior, he was chief product officer, industrial advisory for Hitachi Vantara, VP and global head of IoT for industrial and energy at Siemens Advanta, all topping off 7 years at Deloitte Digital, where he was the practice lead for Industry 4.0 and Industrial Internet of Things. Sid holds an MBA from Rotman and a Master's of Engineering, Mechanical Engineering from University of Ottawa. Sid, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you. Appreciate it. Like, it's a great pleasure. I guess, as you say, a long-time listener, first-time caller, so I've been listening few of those over the years that you have been publishing it. It's a great, thought-provoking podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's the first time anybody's ever used that. I was a Rush Limbaugh fan way back in the day, and that was always a common way to start the conversation. So I will make no comparisons further there and leave it simply at that. So, you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast. And of course, we think about one's personal and professional digital thread in terms of their journey. And so I always like to ask, you know, what would you consider to be your digital thread? In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's a question that I guess you look back to see where you are and how did you make it here and why are you doing what you're doing? So for me, like, I was born in a family of engineers. I graduated engineering. I worked in aerospace and auto. I was good at my job. Like, I did control systems for airplanes, landing gears, and climate control. And I liked my job, but then I found out that you just have to do it again and again. And I guess a part of me was looking for a calling. It's like, where will I be good at? Where I can differentiate myself? So I took a path, like I went to do my MBA and ended up in Deloitte. And the journey took in a very different direction. So I guess I caught a different thread. My first thread was engineering thread. The other thing was completely consulting thread in IT. I spent a couple of years working in banks and insurance companies doing enterprise architecture. Again, I felt like, hey, this is good. I can do it, but this might not be my calling. And fortune kind of took me to a couple of industrial companies, especially a nuclear power plant. And I was doing my traditional consulting work. And they started asking, "Is like, hey, we in radiation protection need this kind of technology to work with IT. Our IT is more focused on emails and printers and cybersecurity. Can you help us with that?" And first time, I guess, in my career, I got to a point like, okay, maybe that connecting these two threads is my path forward, because not a lot of people kind of at those times, like 10 years earlier, traversed between IT zones and the OT, and they were both like quite far apart. So I'll say for me, like putting them together at that time, putting the enterprise architecture together by looking at OT function, radiation protection, operations, safety, logistics, with the help of IT and making them aligned on a business and IT roadmap and architecture and funding was my great start. And I am truly grateful that I actually took that path forward and kind of that brought me up here. And over the time that became an IoT and then industrial IoT as a whole business area, it followed its hype cycle. But now it's kind of intrinsic part of most transformations. You have to look at how IT and OT work together, how the data comes together, how automation comes together. And I have kind of walked that journey, took the hard path, figured it out. And I'll say that's kind of my personal journey of being where I am right now and can make the influence or transformation that I can.
That's great. The crossover of IT, OT, and I'd offer, you know, we'll talk about it in a few minutes, but also consulting and product leadership. I think that puts you kind of in the dead center of really impact, especially from an industrial perspective. So great story. I know you've got a decade-long track record of successfully leading digital industry transformation practices for Deloitte Digital. There you created a $55 million top-line practice. And then separately at Siemens Advanta, you built and were running their U.S. and European vertical market in IoT, industrial, and energy. So a decade plus doing this, you know, what were some of your more memorable engagements there?
Good question, actually. Again, I guess walk down the memory lane. As I remember my early days in Deloitte, like, we were all excited that we wanted to do this IoT. Gartner and Forrester were all there in terms of saying this is the next thing. And when we started doing it, it was really hard. Like, people have not done this before. And we did multiple projects, I guess. I mean, I worked at a cold storage group. I worked in a couple of sports company, I worked in an airport. They all wanted these IoT solutions. As I think back, I mean, we did those projects as a project, like custom project. And for something to be successful in a company like Deloitte and Siemens, I mean, you need a lot of repeatability in terms of, you have to tell your team, this is what you're going to do. This is the product and services. These are our standard partners. And again, go back to the client and say, hey, this is how we are better and support you. And earlier part was like kind of ad hoc. I mean, I struggled along with my industry peers and my partners, like, what is that standard that we have kind of by the time learned from CRM like Salesforce and SAP? I mean, that had a standard. You can expand it, you can scale it. IoT didn't have it. So what we did at Deloitte, or my personal journey on that one, was I sat down with the leadership group and I said, hey, we've done this ad hoc 10 to 15 project. We came out okay, but there's nothing repeatable. This is not start of something great. It might just go away after a few months and years if you kind of don't scale it. So with the help of the management, we landed our biggest client, Caterpillar, and we say, hey, give us a chance. And we do an investment program, not a project, a program that will standardize how we do a large program of IoT and how it actually creates real value for you. And it kind of became the Life Factory program. It has 7 projects under it. We had SAP, Microsoft, PTC, Site Machine, and a lot of partners together. We did the use cases like a traditional consulting firm. And the big thing was we did an IoT architecture, enterprise architecture for CAT. How do you use these things together? And then from there, we broke them down into smaller programs. And we ended up doing multiple projects that started to work as expected by the client and by us. I mean, we did a real-time MES. We did location tracking for inside and outside of equipment. We did like shipping automation all the way from a factory. We did real-time reprioritization. We did digital dashboard for production. And finally, we started to feel like this is what IoT in success will look like. I mean, there was a lot of hype that time. Everybody was committing to mega million saving, but like very few were able to deliver it. And for me and my team at Deloitte and Caterpillar, that was a marquee project, a program. It's still there. If you Google Caterpillar Life Factory, that whole program, the output, the process, the partners out there. And I mean, something for me, the most memorable engagement that kind of paved my path for larger, bigger, successful career and project development.
That's a great one, certainly, to remember. And I will have to look it up, but I must say, I think I've heard about this in passing. I'm curious, you use the term digital industrial transformation a lot in your profile, and that's how we introduced you as being an expert in that. In this time that you worked across these companies, again, over a decade, how did you see digital industrial transformation changing over that time?
Okay, this is a good one. I guess this is kind of part of how, I guess, the industry has grown, the clients have grown, even myself and my peer group, which I always keep in contact with, have kind of grown their careers. So if I look back, digital transformation in the beginning for industries were, the factories had a standard ERP systems and a standard set of PLM, MES, and CMMS. At the bottom, you had the SCADA systems running the factories, and then you have the ERPs on the top. And here comes IoT. We're going to change the world. We're going to bring the best of IT and OT and give you predictive maintenance, I guess. And it was all those early days of GE Predicts, I guess. They made the market for us. It's good for us. I mean, they did the big thinking. For me, I mean, at that point, we were on the highest point of hype cycle, I guess. I mean, PTC was doing great. GE was doing great. Siemens had MindSphere, SAP had Leonardo. I mean, I think at that point, we had a lot of buzz. We had a lot of excitement. Clients wanted that thing implemented at the site. They wanted to see the business use cases and benefits. But in the early days, we didn't really know how to do it properly. I mean, we had a good idea. If you remember, we had kind of like 95% of POCs didn't go into production. We had a lot of people claiming they have done it, but hardly a few that have implemented to scale. We made a lot of mistakes, and I guess over time, we have learned from those mistakes. And our partners have become a lot more pragmatic in terms of what can be done. Our people, our practitioners have actually learned the skills of IoT. Before, a lot of them came from one side, either OT side or IT side, and then they had to learn the other side. But now I think those learning paths have been formalized and people are actually experts. And the main thing is we have this whole new set of IoT platforms. Before, it was like an IT company trying to do IoT. Same thing as a person, an IT person trying to do OT. But those things, I say, as a standard industry, we have platforms like PTC, like Machine, even AWS and Microsoft. We have people who are expert. And then from a consulting and practitioner's point of view, we have found the use cases that create value. I mean, it's no longer science fiction or like I found it. It's like kind of known now. OEE calculation, predictive maintenance, predictive quality. And we can deliver those things in a relatively fast amount of time. So I'll say that's the transformation that has changed. Like we walked away from ERPs and then mega application and SCADA to a set of platforms that are standard. People are trained on it. We are able to deliver value in tandem with the other applications. And we are moving this. The great part is IoT didn't die with the digital industrial transformation. I mean, it's still there, which is great. It didn't die with the hype cycle. We actually standardized the process and the outcome, and everybody is now using it. Just like, I compare it to CRMs and ERPs. Those things are there forever. And I guess IoT and digital transformation stay forever, I guess. I'll say the last thing is, things have actually gone up on the flip side. Now they say, okay, the easy part is done. I don't want to pay you for like basic OE calculation. You have to give me the higher end stuff. And that is, I guess, where the next level of challenge for us is.
Well said there. I like the fact that you jumped into, in the middle step there, into platforms or industrial IoT platforms. So I know our exec search team placed you at Hitachi Vantara in 2020. So you were chief product officer, industrial advisory, and Lumada IoT and Insights, of course, that being their industrial IoT platform. It was a bit of a crossover role with one foot in advisory and one foot in product leadership, thus our comments earlier. So tell us, what was your remit there and of what are you most proud?
I'll say my role at Hitachi, and thanks, Glenn, again, for placing me, and if Jonathan is listening, thanks, Jonathan. I mean, that was, I guess, for me, the highest point of happiness or personal gratification as a role I was able to deliver. I mean, from my journey from a Deloitte, where it was mostly consulting and solution accelerators, to Siemens, which was large scale programs and solutions and consulting, I always felt my pull towards product. And same time, Hitachi had just started to consolidate their group companies in North America and Europe and Australia. So they were merging the data systems with the consulting, and then also some of the smaller groups which were focused on consulting and product. And I got a chance to come in and help them create the industrial side of it. What it meant was Hitachi is already known as one of the big industrials, but their companies were more focused on delivering to banking and healthcare and more like IT hardware. So I got a chance to create this whole practice that focused on product and then consulting on top. And it was a good time because they had just acquired ABB, power grid business. They were in after a few months bought the GlobalLogic for digital engineering. So it was a great time. And I had a great role to take this really legendary company into this industrial consulting and product. So I got the role of chief product officer, focused on taking their IP around manufacturing application and took it to the next level, which is productized it. And for me, I guess, and for Hitachi, the main strategic thing was, what should we do that has not been done before? We don't want to replicate MindSphere or Predix, or we don't want to compete with AWS and Microsoft. We can't be a small, tiny shop. We have to think big. So what we came up at that time was to create role-based, persona-driven applications. So if you look at a process of somebody working in a company, any company, automotive, aerospace, they have a role. And for that role, they need applications. And they typically have to go into enterprise application like CMMS or MES to do their part. What if the applications are designed for the role in mind? And then they take care of who do you need to talk to in terms of enterprise application, what data you get from IT and OT, so that you can do your work better. And that became a kind of strategic calling. It's like, okay, Hitachi will do a role-based application and our product were designed that way. Like Hitachi is a lot more focused on custom development, which is kind of similar. And my role was to take that IP, think about role-based, and start making a product. So we built the Lumada product line. I think it was already there in some sense, more focused on data and financial services. And my goal was to take it and focus it towards the manufacturing, energy, and rail vertical. And we started with mid-sized clientele, a lot more in Asia and Europe because competition was a little bit less, I guess, and Hitachi's presence was very well noticed. And I'll say that was my calling. I executed on it. I was really happy about it. I mean, a part of the role was not only to build the product and the clientele, but also to build the team underneath that will function. And Hitachi had this geographically isolated separate groups focusing on different products and clientele. And I brought them all together. Like I had to put a high performing team framework, which I learned in Siemens and Deloitte. And then so that they're all marching towards the same type of product while actually serving their clients in their local industries. And sometimes they were specializations. So like Australia specialized in agriculture and mining. Europe specialized a lot more at that time in automotive, like we got Tesla Gigafactory was coming out. And in North America, it was a lot more about the big auto and aerospace. And for Japanese perspective, like you build a business, you have to grow the business. So like this was kind of a good hit, I guess, in terms of clientele. Even our analysts like it. The product went from, I guess, nowhere to a Gartner visionary. So you're competing with the big boys, I guess, and big girls. And I mean, the growth was phenomenal. The team was happy. I was pretty happy with that project from my side and how it came out at Hitachi level.
I like the fact that you use the term calling quite a bit in the conversation there. Most recently, you were CTO and president for digital and innovation for Aztec, a leading global manufacturer of specialized equipment for asphalt road building, aggregate processing, and concrete production. In fact, I believe your tenure had you ringing the bell at NASDAQ there as well. So just quickly, what was your focus and some of your key accomplishments?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, NASDAQ bell ringing was an amazing experience. I guess you see it on CNBC and Bloomberg every day, but okay, to be there is fun. But for me, coming to Aztec, a little bit of, again, like following my path. So I have this feeling and like a passion for solving problems which can make a difference. I mean, we all have that. I mean, sometimes I have it more, sometimes I have it less. But at those times at my career, like, I guess environmental sustainability was the big deal. I mean, Hitachi had just gone through this massive program of 2030 carbon neutrality, and then we did a big program with Rainforest Connect. And my program showed up in Japan Winter Summer Olympics at the time, even COP26. When I was thinking about sustainability and automation and role-based products I got a call from Aztec, which is kind of a mid-sized company, like a billion plus construction equipment. And that industry was ripe for digital transformation. There is not a lot of companies playing in that market. There is not a lot of software vendors out there. And it's one of the most, I guess, not the right way to say it, but environmentally unfriendly business to produce asphalt and concrete. And they all want to change. And for me, I saw what I have been building in Hitachi at a much grander level. Can I do the same thing at a much more narrower level, but then do a full vertical solution all the way from a plant or a construction equipment, do the machine controls for the plant so they are running at optimal performance, telematics on the equipment so that I can control the engine, the operation, and then do the business like processes in a more optimized manner, just like how I built Lumada. So that's the reason I came to Aztec. So I was the CTO and the president for the digital. And the role was, hey, take the solutions that we have around 10 to 12 different groups. We just acquired a couple of companies under my leadership and take the whole new set of technologies, take all the products we have, transform the way the clients are doing business. This industry really wants to change, right? I mean, there is not a lot of competition. And I felt I had the skills and the path to do it. So I came in. I built the product line on machine controls. I did build a telematics product line, connected the whole thing together in a, we call it rock to road value chain for clients. And it was a, like a SaaS program that everybody can come in, role based, do the work they are asked to do, optimize using some level of AI. And then you can pass that information to the Department of Transportation or your end clients, and you have better roads, which are more sustainable. I mean, that was my remit. I mean, there were a lot more other paths, like including building the whole team, which is kind of very unique when you work in a smaller industrial company. They're not the MBAs, or they are more experience-based people, bringing them together. Clients who are wanting change, but we're uncomfortable with new things. How do you walk them through that path? And then again, being a president, like run the P&L in a profitable manner, which prior to me was not the case. It was a loss-making group, so I had to bring that all, grow the business, grow the team, make sure the clients are happy with the transformation. I was pretty satisfied with what I got into and what I was able to deliver.
So in a recent conversation setting up for this podcast, you mentioned a deep passion for reshoring of industrial AI, which I thought is a great way to refer to the opportunity here. Can you say more about this?
Definitely. Yeah, this has kind of become my latest passion and calling, I guess. I guess we all followed the COVID supply chain glitches, and we have all read the articles. I've read the articles. I mean, for me, at Aztec, I kind of felt it too. Like, so we have all talked about diversifying the supply chain, which means, hey, we should procure it from somewhere else except one place, mostly China, for certain industries, and India for like technical and biotech. We went through this challenge. Inflation came in, and we talked about doing it. And then every time we do it, we don't do it. We kind of go back to our normal because life is great. But I say this is the first time that companies and governments are making a concerted effort to make the change. And you see the government is spending a lot of money, both in Europe and in US, the CHIPS Act, the IRA funding, a lot of it to bring critical manufacturing onshore. I feel it will not happen if all the competitive capitalistic KPIs are not met. I mean, automation is same both places. It was always a labor arbitrage. And I think this time, the key differentiator would be the industrial AI technologies. So I've seen the technologies around like Hybyte and Cognite, which allow us to take the data from controls. Controls has always been there. I mean, they have not matured as fast. I think they do the job fantastically, so they're good. But the next part, which is the industrial data ops or industrial AI, that has matured. And then some of the other ERP vendors and IBMs, Maximum, they all come together and reduce the cost of operation to the point that we are almost competitive with Mexico, with China, with India, with Vietnam. Of course, a little bit higher because our cost structures are high, but then you compare it to the risk of not diversifying your supply chain. And then against the risk adjusted, I think we're doing good. And for me, that is the next big wave. So like onshoring is not going to happen like 2 to 3 years. It will take 10 to 15 years. So for me, the next 5 years is the critical defining moment. Can we make the manufacturing come back here and be competitive in a long term? So this is kind of, for me, saying this is my hype cycle. We are on the top of it. Everybody's investing in it. Everybody believes in it. But can it be done? If it can be done in the next 5 years, it will stay here forever. Otherwise, after 4 to 5 years, life will be normal, I hope. And then it will go back to wherever competitively it's cheaper to make. But I think this is the big deal right now. Bring back manufacturing, especially the new areas. When you make a new factory for EVs, the batteries, the energy grid, the rails, especially automotive. I mean, government is spending money, and then we have the technology first time that we can be competitive in long run here. And that, for me, is the reshoring with industrial AI.
I think it's an interesting thesis. Most people look at, as you say, supply chain difficulties, maybe geopolitics being what they are and all, as the drivers for reshoring. In some sense, I think what you're saying is that technology in the form of AI, probably robotics you'd put in there and other such technologies, has created, if you will, or enabled now the catalyst of these events to allow us to reshore as Europe and North America. And so, as you say up front, without those technologies, it probably would not have been a lasting reshoring. But with those technologies, it becomes kind of the great equalizer, if you will. I've heard this relative to robotics and certainly manufacturing, especially in North America, and you know, given some of the labor constraints that are there as well. But we're also seeing it now on more traditional information technology fields like coding, maintenance of software, things like that, where some of these large language models and AI are able to, you know, to do what teams of programmers had to do before. So it creates also a reshoring element, especially in a world where we talk a lot about things like data sovereignty and data security these days too. So it's an interesting thought. You've probably been one of the first to put a twist on that that I hadn't really thought about before. I know if you think about industrial automation, it certainly is at an important crossroads. You've mentioned reshoring, but there's also, of course, the energy transition, labor challenges I mentioned. What are some of the key trends you're watching relative to the future of industry?
Yeah, I think there are many threads that you can trace here. Each of them have their own business case, leadership groups, people, and companies that want it to be successful. For the mega trend that I am seeing overall is, I think we had the IT revolution, I guess, late 2000s, early 2000s. Then you had the big data that came out. Then the IoT came out. And now we have the big AI talk, I mean, generative AI. But from an industrial point of view, which of these threats would be a lot more relevant? And then which of them will define the future? I mean, time will tell, but I mean, as we discussed, from the industrial point of view, the ability to implement automation and robotics combined is one of the big things that is happening, and is happening faster. There is a lot change. Finally, there is a lot more movement in this space, like rather than standard SCADA and PLCs, now you have soft PC defined coming in. The next big thing that we talk about a lot is the industrial data, which is new. I mean, it has been there for many years, but it is reborn in a way that it actually works now, and it can automate a lot of process where 80% of the data, people spend the time making models, correcting tags. That's going. The enterprise applications, they're still there. I mean, they got better. They can talk to each other better. But I think there will be a disruption in those applications where with the low-code RPA kind of things where people can build these smaller enterprise apps that fit their purpose. So for me, I mean, those are the technology trends. But overall, as we move forward, I'll see reshoring again as one of the big things. But within reshoring, the whole vertical supply chain moving back to US or Australia so that they can do it from the beginning, which is like designing, trying to mine the material, produce it, manufacture it, and then recycle. I think that worked together from a business point of view, doing the vertical supply chain within the area of business and the technology to support it. And for me, those two things, if we are successful in the next 5 years, will stay forever. And that will also alleviate the labor challenges that we are coming in. Because I mean, a lot of the labor that we have in the traditional industries are not the most highly educated by university, but they are more trade-based. They learn from trade. So if you have these low-code and RPA kind of things, which are you can talk to and you can tell it to do, it'll be fantastic for those people to actually take this industry forward. That's what I feel. I mean, there are a lot of threads, like I mean, the EV thread, the battery thread, the charging thread, I mean, carbon capture thread. I mean, they're all going to run in their own small threads, and then let's see which is successful. But I mean, overall theme, I think this is where we are all going.
Very good. So I'm sure our audience is wondering now, because you've talked about everything you've done up to this point, you know, what's next for you? What's your next calling?
Yeah, I mean, usually it's a little late when you figure out what the calling is. For me, I am looking for a place where I can make a difference in terms of products, the new next generation digital product and in the industrial domain, whether it is mining or auto or aerospace or food and bev or construction. They all have these smaller products that they want to sell. I mean, they have been selling it. But the management always want to put it all together in terms of a cohesive architecture that the client can consume it and the teams are not duplicating efforts. That's what I'm really good at. And then what I'm personally passionate about is bringing the data ops and the industrial AI capabilities to a smaller sector. I am personally being investing a lot of my time looking at water, wastewater treatment, and then agricultural, like animal food and agricultural product. I mean, those two industries are relatively small. They're relatively local. They have done the traditional way of doing the work. And food and water for me are the base of the industries or human civilization, I guess. And they have not transformed, like just like how I saw in construction. I mean, these two industries are ripe for transformation. And I think with the capabilities of the industrial data ops like Cognite and Hybyte, and my experience with role-based application, I can help them create a vertical solution. So they don't have to buy like 17 different solutions, but I mean, a vertical solution from automation to apps to business operations that I can help solve. So this is kind of my passion right now, trying to focus my effort of all the industrial architecture and technologies and partners and solving a vertical solution end-to-end, like a vertical solution like from automation all the way to business apps. So the large companies tend to buy piecemeal and put it together with consultants. Small, medium companies don't like it. They want somebody to put it together. And I mean, that's what I am. I think my calling is or could be, time will tell. But these are the two big thoughts that are in my mind as I guess, put my thinking into what I'm going to go, where my journey will take me.
Sounds like you are remaining true to your calling, as you said earlier. So in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
Yeah. I mean, usually I just look around my house and my family. They work super hard to keep, I guess, a person like me in check. But I have read two books some time back, and I've read them a few times again and again. And that helps me, I guess, when I get muddled in day-to-day and I can't see, I guess, the forest or the tree in the forest. So one of them is called Guns, Germs, and Steel. It's an old book. I mean, I read it a long time back. It's a Pulitzer winning prize book. And all it does is, it's like a consulting book. It says, why was China at that time in the history the most powerful nation? Why was Europe a most powerful nation at a certain time? Why did America become successful from like 400 years, nothing? Why did things happen? And I mean, it kind of trying to scientifically prove a point. So as a consultant, I am like looking at my life and my work. So if you are Google, like, why did you become that? And then similarly, if you are not Google and you want to be Google or something else, you have to build those founding factors, put it all together. I mean, that's kind of what I learned. Like the world has evolved like over the 100,000 years as human came in. And different civilizations have come at a different point, and they always brought in something a little bit different. So they out-innovated themselves from before. They were not scared of competition. I mean, conflict kind of brings a little bit of innovation. And there is always a next level of innovation. It will never be like, okay, today's technology is going to be the end all be all. That's kind of what keeps me going, that, okay, generative AI is not the end all be all. Like, IoT is not the end all be all. There will be something next, definitely. And I have to keep looking. And there will always be the next AT&T, and then the next Exxon, and the next Google, and the next Apple. So there will be there. So I have to keep driving, be true to my calling, and I can find the next one. We have 100,000 years of proof that it is possible. So I'll keep doing. And one small other book, which is In Pursuit of Happiness. It's the other scientific book. I read it again and again. Eventually, you want to stay happy, Greg, and be satisfied with what you do. Happiness is not what common sense says is common. So if you read that book, you'll figure out it's a lot more scientific. What makes people happy and not happy? I mean, these were the two things that I read every 2 years. So I don't forget the lessons and keep my motivation and calling going.
You know, Guns, Germs, and Steel is actually one of my favorites as well. I guess we could say Guns, Germs, Steel, comma, robots, and AI in terms of the defining technologies that are the great equalizers between civilizations, right? And I guess if I were to look at that and In Pursuit of Happiness, those two books probably really define who Sid Verma is in some sense, right? And back to the the intro on Crossroads. So, well, Sid, thank you for sharing this time and insights with us today.
Appreciate it, Ken. This was a pleasure. And as I said, like, this is a fantastic podcast. You've done 200 of it. I mean, I've listened to a few of them. I mean, it gives you a perspective of what people are thinking from their vantage point, and you bring it out quite well. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to do the same.
Sure. Well, thank you for agreeing to do it and participating. And thank you for recognizing that. I think you make a great addition to the leaders that we've interviewed on the prior 210 episodes. So this has been Sid Verma, a deeply experienced digital industrial transformation advisor. Thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you a momentous day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.